Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Well, we do live in interesting times, don't we? I mean, in our collective lifetimes, have we ever had to worry about an election being affected by the most outrageous collection of misinformation one can think of? While conspiracy theories are nothing new, with the advent of the internet, it seems so easy for a bit of nonsense to make it around the world five times before a common sense response even registers. And like anything else in this world, when you add religion to the mix, it can get magnified a thousandfold. There is no question that this is the case today. To help us figure out what we are up against, I have invited Dr. Gregory Camp to join us today. Dr. Camp is one of the leading voices in the area of conspiracy theories. He's a retired history professor originally from Bismarck, North Dakota. He now lives in Macon, Georgia. He's an evangelical Christian, and in the 1990s, he became concerned with the alarming rise in conspiracy theory beliefs among his co-religionists in the time leading up to the year 2000. Y'all remember Y2K. Then, End Times Prophecy Ministries were producing books that cited sources that had once been used by Tsarist Russia, Fascist Italy, and Nazi Germany. As a result, in 1995, he began research on a book, Selling Fear, Conspiracy Theories and End Times Paranoia. And even though that book is more than a few years old, I think it still resonates today. So, we welcome to Common Threads, Dr. Gregory Camp. Hello, sir.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Certainly, certainly. My first question to you, sir, would be about the term conspiracy theory itself. Is it not a neutral term? What I mean by that is, just because I have a theory that some people are conspiring to do something, say, illegal or immoral or just downright bad, that doesn't make it crazy, right? So if I believe, and there certainly is evidence, that Lee Harvey Oswald did not act alone, so that means that people conspired to kill JFK. As long as I don't believe that Martians killed JFK or the U.S. Senate conspired to kill JFK, cannot that be a legitimate thought?
Well, the term conspiracy theory is really something of a modern invention. At first, you see it come to prominent use after the Warren Commission came out with its report stating that Lee Harvey Oswald was the sole assassin. And they used that term to refer to those people who were willing to believe any number of other things. Now, just the term, generic term, conspiracy theory, as you just suggested, is neutral. However, today it's come to mean something that is a pernicious, untrue idea that, frankly, I guess, appeals to some of the fringe elements in society.
Sure, sure. And that is certainly how I see it used. I never hear it or see it used in any common sense or neutral manner. Yeah, it's always about something that's kind of tinfoil hat oriented. Let's go back to what inspired you around the millennium and work our way up to today. What were the common denominators that you saw that inspired you to write and publish your book back in 1995? And I have not read this book, but I'm suspecting that part of what you were focusing on was what some people call the satanic panic. That and Y2K. Let's talk about those two to begin with.
Well, I decided to write the book because, as I mentioned, that there were a lot of end-time prophecy books coming out of the more conservative end of the evangelical world. And I noticed as a historian that they were using sources as credible history, books that had been used by the Nazis, the fascists in Italy, the Tsars, Russia, and so on. And they were using it as credible sources. And that caused me a great deal of concern. I mean, end times prophecy in the United States is something of a cottage industry. There was a brilliant book by a guy named Paul Boyer. He was a history PhD. He taught at University of Wisconsin, called When Time Shall Be No More. They cover some of this stuff in the 20th century in particular. But the what you have in the end times thing and their adoption of conspiracy theory is they're giving some really pernicious, really evil ideas credibility to the people who read their books. And that's one of the dangers that we have today. You, in the charismatic world, charismatic as in Pentecostal-like, you have people making so-called prophetic words that are backing all this up. But in the 90s, that bothered me, and I started looking at a number of different end times books, and I was shocked at how many of them bought into that. The thing like with the satanic panic, that was, do you recall a guy named Mike Warnke?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, he had written a book called The Satan Seller, and in it, that came out early 70s, as I recall. And he made claims to being a satanic high priest in charge of 1,500 followers somewhere in Southern California. Well, he became, he was on the speaking circuit for years and kind of dropped out of it and started into like a Christian comedian ministry, I guess you would call it. But in the 90s, this satanic panic thing picked up again. Evangelical authors and radio hosts like Bob Larson, who were pushing the idea that there is a group of people high up in the government that are involved in satanic worship, sacrificing babies and all this sort of thing. So Mike Warnke got back on that bandwagon in the 1990s. There was a group out of Chicago, I think it was called Cornerstone, the magazine, and that might be the name of their publishing house too, that did an expose of it. And the book was called Selling Satan. And it just went into all the background of Warnke and showed that it was all a hoax. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm so glad you brought up the name Bob Larson, because on my way here, I was trying to remember his name. But he had a show on a local station here in West Michigan. And I wouldn't claim to have listened to it every day, but I did tune in a bit for entertainment value. I did not buy into any of this at all, but it was great entertainment. And he did take on challengers. It was a call-in show, and he did take on challengers, which is a little bit better than just yapping into a mic, spewing nonsense for an hour. So thank you for reminding me. That's the guy. So my question is this then. Was there a Joe McCarthy moment? And maybe what you're talking about in this article that was published, was there a Joe McCarthy moment that brought all of this down? The whole satanic panic where, all of a sudden babies are being sacrificed and Satan is in our presence.
Well, it got worked into a frenzy in the 90s. It even made it onto national TV. Geraldo Rivera had programs about these things supposedly going on. And you remember that daycare? I think it was out in California. This poor family was accused of having tunnels under their daycare where children were sacrificed and stuff. It was all nonsense.
Yes, I hadn't thought about that in ages, but you're right. I do recall that.
I think the family's last name was Bucky. As far as legally, nothing came of it because there was no proof, but it was devastating to that family, all this fantasy. Well, Bob Larson, on his that program, indeed would have people on there. He supposedly would cast out demons on the program. I always found it interesting that these demons he was talking to would remain silent during his breaks when he would, appeals for money. But it got crazy. It really did. And I think that Cornerstone book, when that came out, John Trott was one of the authors. I can't remember the other fellow's name. But they did a really thorough expose and then brought that to the religious booksellers. And it had a huge impact. And all of a sudden, Mike Warnke's claims fell apart. And then there were several other people who were claiming to have been involved in the occult at a high level that were exposed as well. There was a Rebecca Brown, as I recall, and a Lauren Stratford, who claimed that they had been abused by Satan himself and that they had ties to Mike Warnke's coven down in Southern California. Well, he didn't have a coven, so we know that what they were saying was nonsense as well. But these people would make it on religious programs, 700 Club and stuff like that. And, you know, I find one of the things that is distressing in the evangelical world, at least on the conservative side, is they don't ask questions. By and large, they don't say, oh, come on, you know, have a healthy skepticism about some of the things that they hear. And that is dangerous, especially like what we're seeing now. It's very dangerous.
And let's really focus in on who we are talking about, because the term evangelicals is very, very broad.
Yes.
So which camps are you talking about? I suspect that one would be those who describe themselves as Pentecostals. Am I correct?
Well, yes, to a certain degree, those who are in the Pentecostal group, but their spiritual relatives, the charismatics, it's much more prevalent there. The difference between the charismatics and the Pentecostals is the Pentecostals started early part of the 20th century and gave birth to denominations like the Assemblies of God, Church of God, and so on. Whereas the charismatics, they were just part of mainstream churches, Catholic, Presbyterian, Lutheran, what have you. But they began to get active in the gifts of the Spirit, things like speaking in tongues and prophesying and that sort of thing. Now, for a few years, they stayed within those denominations, but eventually they became a denomination of their own. And that's like by the 1980s or so. And that group has continued to grow. And frankly, you hear some of the most outrageous conspiracy theory ideas coming out of that particular camp. And what makes that particularly dangerous is that you have people who are recognized as prophets who are propagating this stuff. So people in the charismatic camp think, oh, this is a word from God, so it must be true, so we can't question it.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Dr. Gregory Camp, and we're talking about his 1995 book, Selling Fear, Conspiracy Theories and End Times Paranoia, as well as conspiracy theories today and how they are affecting the political process, among other things. And so this dynamic that you bring up, that people simply aren't questioning. So somebody comes in and they'll say whatever, that there's Satanism that's taking over the United States, or pedophilia in pizza shops, whatever it is. Why do you think, is there something systemic in evangelical Christianity, or is more specifically in the charismatic movement, that allows that to happen? I mean, clearly this isn't going to happen to Unitarians. Right, so what's in this system that might be a problem?
Some group, like you said, you know, that the people that are under this evangelical umbrella, it's many different groups, and some of them vary widely from each other. I'm talking about the more conservative elements, those within the charismatic movement. And granted, within that movement too, you have people who are opposed to what we're seeing today. But there is, within the charismatic movement, let's say, and perhaps among fundamentalism in general, is there is a genuine, deep-seated desire to believe. And they look at their faith. I mean, you can understand that they're looking at this from a religious or a faith-based point of view. However, they then will transfer those thoughts to some of the words of their leaders, so that if, I can think of one off the top of my head. His name is Rick Joyner. He's a major charismatic leader. This guy's going so far as to say that Christians should be gathering weapons and forming Christian militias. he's been predicting a civil war in America for years. Well, he's not so much predicting it as he is promoting the idea. I mean, this guy's own daughter got on media and apologized for his extremism. But people will look at ideas like this, and then on Christian television, most of which is dominated by the charismatics, in the same way that Christian radio tends to be dominated more by fundamentalist religions. You do have charismatics on there, a few, and you do have some fundamentalists on Christian TV. But by and large, Christian TV is the home base of many charismatic ministries. And they're not shy at all anymore about getting involved in politics. And their ideas I'm finding them increasingly disturbing, simply because they're buying into ideas. I guess one of the more obvious ways that they do this, too, is you heard President Trump was declared as Cyrus by some of these people.
I have.
Comparing
him
to the Persian.
Yes, and well, we've actually talked about that on this show a couple of years ago. But go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, the idea is that he is God's chosen. And if he's God's chosen, well, you can't vote against him. You can't question him. Some have now gone further. They're saying that he's like a King David. Now, why that's important is because King David was recognized as a prophet. And so if this guy, Donald Trump, is considered a King David, thereby a prophet, the things he says hold prophetic power. I've sometimes wondered if his goofier statements about this virus is just going to disappear, if that isn't thrown out for the charismatics. It's a weird, it's hard to explain to people that haven't been inside of that movement and see how it operates. Most of it, a lot of people would find nothing less than bizarre. Now, as far as Pentecostals go, they tend to be much more cautious about the charismatic movement and some of their beliefs. They're established denominations. They have a hierarchy that, you know, has like a pope would, I suppose, will try to keep out some of the more fanatical ideas.
Does QAnon, actually, I shouldn't ask the question that way. I should say, I was not aware until quite recently that QAnon actually has a connection to religion. I thought that that QAnon might have some people who are religious, but and then some people who are secular. And that's probably true, but apparently, a lot of people who are Christians are looking to QAnon as sort of a prophet as well. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I know some people like that here in Macon. Absolutely. They're convinced that this QAnon thing is absolutely real, and that Donald Trump is fighting a secret war against pedophiles and Satan worshipers. And, in an odd way, it's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, because now he's beginning to grab onto those ideas because he knows he has support among people that believe in that.
But these people who are following Q don't even know who Q is, right?
No, they don't. And yet you have some who claim that they are lieutenants in this QAnon movement. They believe that Donald Trump is secretly fighting all of these evil things, Satanism, child molestation, and so on, but that there are lieutenants out there. Do you remember a few years ago, did you ever hear of a guy named Mark Taylor?
Probably not the one you're thinking of. Tell me about
it. Well, this Mark Taylor was a former fireman, and he became famous in the charismatic world because he allegedly predicted that Donald Trump would win in 2016 before they decided on a candidate. Turns out that what he predicted was that Trump would win in 2012, and he didn't even run that year. But he became famous for that and was touted, and you saw him on Christian television claiming now to be a prophet. Well, he has since gotten involved in the QAnon thing and is making some of the most outrageous claims. The Illuminati is behind the severe weather we're seeing, and that the hurricanes hitting the South, which are largely Republican or conservative states, or the Illuminati doing Satan's bidding to try to keep the Republican vote down. I mean, this sort of lunatic fringe stuff.
You know, I mean,
there are people.
No, finish your thought.
Ahead,
no. You finish your thought, then I have a question.
But this lunatic fringe idea, you have people with apparent credence. I mean, their gullibility to believe some of this stuff is absolutely towering.
I'm glad you brought up the Illuminati, because there are three conspiracies that I wanted to discuss with you. First of all, was the Illuminati. And I seem to understand that they're not new. The second would be the Trilateral Commission, and the third, the Elders of Zion, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. So let's, and we may not be able to get through all three. What have we got? Yeah, we've got about 6 minutes. So let's just start with the Illuminati.
Well, the Illuminati conspiracy that you hear of today generally goes back to a secret society that did in fact exist, the Illuminati, in 1776. There was a professor at Ingolstadt University in Bavaria, Adam Weishaupt, who was the founder of it. Now, it was a secret society that was started inside of Masonic lodges. So it was like a secret society within a secret society. Before 10 years had passed, it got exposed, and its members had to go underground. In fact, in 1800, the presidential election between Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, the Illuminati, in fact, was a campaign issue. John Adams was convinced that Thomas Jefferson was an Illuminist and brought that out. George Washington claimed that he knew of the Illuminati. He was a Mason, in fact. And he knew of the Illuminati, and he said he wouldn't be surprised if it did exist here in the United States as well.
Well, what was their goal? What was the goal
of
the Illuminati? Why were they considered bad?
Well, allegedly, what it was is that these people in the Illuminati, they were Enlightenment thinkers, they were scientists, they were philosophers, historians, and so on. And what they sought is to use Enlightenment ideas to transform governments. They wanted to get rid of monarchies, for instance. So many of one of the things that they saw in the United States, for instance, that they were thrilled about was we threw off a monarchy and we established a government largely based on Enlightenment ideas, governed, you know, people being governed by people who were elected and so on. But it continued, the belief is that it continued to exist, at least among conspiracy theorists, and continued on through things like the Masonic lodges and so on. And finally, you get into the 20th century, where through roundtable groups that existed in England, like the one Cecil Rhodes established, and then in the United States, the Council on Foreign Relations. They claim that that is a modern embodiment of the Illuminati, and it still exists. It's located in New York City.
I've been
and
there.
One of the offshoots of that is the Trilateral Commission. Then,
so the Trilateral Commission is related to the Illuminati.
Well, in the minds of conspiracy theorists,
okay,
it's an offshoot of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is an organization made up of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, but who gather and hold private meetings about things with regard to foreign policy that they consider important.
Right. Yeah.
Trilateral Commission.
No, I'm sorry. I was at the Council on Foreign Relations several years ago for a symposium on religion and the public square and politics, and nothing too terribly weird about them, I must say. They were very generous, I'll say that. But go ahead. So there's this connection. So the Trilateral Commission is a real thing. Yeah, that's what you're telling me.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
It came to prominence, I suppose, in the 70s and 80s. But it's three, meaning the United States, Europe, and Japan, mostly, and trying to coordinate the interests of the nations from those parts of the world into common goals. That involved economic, they would discuss things like military things and so on as well. So, yes, it exists, still does exist insofar as I know.
It's just that they're not trying to take over the world, right? Is that the theory, the conspiracy theory, is that they are going to control every aspect of our lives, something like
well,
that?
Well, that's the conspiracy. Now, this group is interested in influencing policy, just like any other group, I suppose, that has an axe to grind or an agenda to push. What they're seeking is, through the Trilateral Commission, is simply a more uniform policy between Europe, the United States, and some of the Far East nations.
And I'm assuming that they publish their findings, that they're not a secret group.
Well, they are secretive to a point. Like with the Council on Foreign Relations, they have a top-notch journal they publish called Foreign Affairs.
Yes, I've read it.
Yes, it's very good indeed. And there was a guy that taught at Georgetown University back in the 50s and 60s. His name was Carol Quigley. And he wrote a book called Tragedy and Hope. And in it, he talks about being familiar with some of these groups that were just growing up and that they were seeking to influence government and so on, and that what they wanted was a more uniform Western approach. Well, Carol Quigley was the advising professor to Bill Clinton. And, of course, that then became grist for the mill as far as the pushing of the conspiracy theories went.
I can understand that. Gregory, we are out of time for today's episode, but many more questions in the hopper here, so I would love to get you back next week and we can continue our conversation.
Sure.
I'm Fred Stella. You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. My guest today has been Dr. Gregory Camp. We're talking about end times prophecy, conspiracy theories, religion, and politics. Dr. Camp is the author of Selling Fear, Conspiracy Theories and End Times Paranoia. Please join us again next week.